Hi everyone, we have a special announcement before we begin this week's episode. Have you ever wished that you could walk around a city and be given a private, intimate tour whispered into your ears in a sultry tone by a celebrity expert guide?
All the time. Yeah.
Well, that dream is now a reality if you're visiting London. Ooh. Because QI has teamed up with VoiceMap, a brilliant self-guided tour app to bring you the first quite interesting tours, packed full of our trademark unusual facts.
And narrated by none other than Mr. QI himself, Sir Stephen Fry.
Whoa. Yeah. You simply download the app from the Apple Store or Google Play, select your tour, stick your headphones in, and get walking.
It's really easy to use. You can put your phone away because VoiceMap monitors your location as you're on the move, and it plays audio to you automatically as you arrive at each location. So it's great. You don't need to check your phone the whole time.
You can do it whenever you like, and like start whenever, stop, have a drink, halfway through.
Do it at 3 a.m. if you're interested.
Creepy.
We've got good street lights here in London, so you know, you'll be able to see everything. We've put two London tours together so far, one of Westminster and one of the City and Bankside.
That's right. So whether you're a first-time visitor to London or a lifetime local, you can take directions from Stephen and see the city from a whole new perspective. For example, did you know that
London is home to over 8.4 million trees, covering 21% of the city? This means that by the UN's standards, it can officially be classified as a forest.
That's so cool. I didn't know that.
I feel so healthy now.
Yeah. Or did you know that our most famous landmark, Big Ben,
keeps accurate time with the help of a handful of pre-decimal coins? A single penny balanced on the pendulum can speed the clock up by 2/5 of a second.
Who uses cash these days?
Yeah, only our clocks.
Well, yeah, only our clocks. That's where it all is.
You might discover how
London's classic red phone boxes were actually based on a tomb.
Oh, they do look quite like a tomb, actually.
So, what's not to love? To get started, just visit qi.com/voicemap.
If you're not going to be in London anytime soon, you can still get involved. You can listen to the tours virtually, just like a podcast or audiobook.
But before you crack into that, make sure you enjoy this week's episode of Lunchbox Envy.
Hey.
This week on Lunchbox Envy, the French philosopher Voltaire allegedly drank 40 cups a day.
Beethoven liked to count out precisely 60 beans for each brew.
And the Hitler Youth only drank decaf. Make of that what you will.
This week we are getting our caffeine fix. It's coffee! Hello and welcome to Lunchbox Envy. I'm Manu and I'm here with my fellow QI elf, Jack.
Hello, Manu.
Hey, Jack.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Excellent, yeah. We're also joined by food writer and chef Rosie McKean.
Woohoo! Vinny, tell we've had a coffee.
Are we all coffee drinkers here?
Yes.
Oh, damn skippy we are.
Damn skippy. What's that?
I don't know. It's just something I say.
So, I'm fascinated by this guy. I'm not a coffee drinker.
What?
Well, I have one or two a month.
I was going to say, so obvious when Jack has had his coffee day in the office. He's like physically shaking about. Oh, it's so much fun.
I mean, I don't know if it's the law of diminishing returns, but staving yourself off coffee and then having one, it's like a high like nothing else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know what that feels like. I think I've drunk coffee every single day. I can't really function very well in the morning without it. However, I think that might be a placebo. And
I think a lot of it is.
Believe that I'm reliant on it when actually I probably could. But it's a nice excuse for me to be a bit of a princess, particularly when I'm on holiday. And I can be like, nope, we need to go get a coffee right now.
But it is, I mean, it is a socially accepted addiction. Like there is a physiological reason why you crave coffee.
Yeah, I have a strict 5 p.m. caffeine cutoff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I can't drink anything caffeinated after then, including regretfully espresso martinis, because they send me west, so I've got to stop.
I had maybe my least cool moment was one of my lovely baker friends made the most delicious tiramisu, and I could not sleep a wink.
Oh,
and
nice.
Really,
yeah, the amount of caffeine. She told me afterwards how many coffees she put in it, and I was like, yeah, so that checks out.
It means in Italian, pick me up.
Huh.
Tiramisu. Su is up. Mm-hmm. Tira is pick nice. Or pull up, essentially referring to the heavy caffeine and alcohol presence in that dessert.
So solid espresso martini.
Mm. Nice. So yes, coffee is it's not a bean.
Oh, classic.
Oh, I know. Every single food we look at
Food is named correctly.
It's definitely none of them. Because coffee is a seed. So it's a seed that grows on a plant, and it's called a bean because it looks like a legume.
So it's got a fruit. So it's like a cherry, I guess.
Yes.
Sorry, and the cogs are turning.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. Each coffee cherry contains two beans.
Right.
But then there are kind of 5% of cherries that...
By beans, you mean seeds.
Oh my God, yes. Yes, they do. But about 5% of cherries only produce one bean, which is called a pea berry, and they're sweeter and rarer.
It's not a pea or a berry. It's a seed of a fruit.
Oh, I give up.
Are they sought after? Or are they not desired?
No, they're like even more sought after.
Because they're tasty. Oh, wow. In fact, that reminds me of the, I saw somewhere on the internet, someone was like, you know, those shower thoughts. Mm. Someone had a shower thought. They were like, technically a vanilla soy latte is a three bean soup. Which
very
actually
good.
We can debunk here and now because coffee's not a bean.
There are 600 billion cups of coffee drunk in a year.
In a year? Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. I thought you were going to say a day.
In a day.
That's crazy. Just by me.
There are 125 species of coffee we found, but we only make coffee from 6 of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, apparently.
Is that because the others don't taste good? Or they're
They're not commercially viable and they don't produce enough fruit maybe or grow in the right areas.
Hmm. Coffee plants can also live up to 100 years.
Oh, wow.
Which is mad.
That's quite long.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make them sustainable in any way? Like, can they flower and reproduce infinitely in that time?
Well, I think they produce the best beans between the ages of 7 and 20. So they have like prime reproductive years.
Right, okay.
Like pine forests, they're not really designed. They're not. It's not commercially viable to grow them for 100 years. You just chop them down after they're 25.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
A bit like Hollywood actresses.
Oh, God.
Wow. We went there already. Christ.
No, I'm not saying it's a good thing. I just
No, it's gone in the book.
Yeah, it's all noted down.
That pisses off Rosie.
Not the first one. Another thing I really loved when we were doing our research on coffee was learning a little bit about the origin legend of coffee.
I don't know it, tell me.
Oh, okay, you're in for a treat. So obviously we don't know exactly how coffee was discovered because it was such a long time ago. It was around the 9th century.
Okay.
But we know that it came from Ethiopia, and the story goes that there was a goat herder called Kaldi.
Wait, we know his name?
Yeah, I know. It's like such a specific story that's been told and told again. But he noticed his goats were eating a specific berry and they were getting really, really hyper. And then he was like, oh God, this is great. I'm going to take these berries. And then he took them to a local like spiritual leader. Mm. And this guy was like, oh, these are amazing. If I eat these, I can stay up all night and pray even longer. And apparently that's how...
What a square.
that's how it...
You should try drugs.
Well, he was, actually.
This is a drug.
That's true. All right. Don't listen to this one, Mum and Dad.
But it wasn't until it moved over to Yemen that they started roasting them and grinding them and drinking them like we're used to today.
Wow. I had no idea that Yemen was the big part of the origin story of coffee. That's so cool.
Yeah. It's actually like the Yemeni Sufi community that back around the 9th century started popularizing it. And it was for exactly this purpose. Sufis pray in a like really kind of sing-songy but very repetitive and quite boring, sorry, my parents are Sufi, if you listen to this, I apologize, quite boring way. So it's like loads of chanting the same thing over and over again over a really long period of time.
Sounds quite meditative.
It is, but you also, like, I've fallen asleep doing this as a kid.
Oh, really?
Right.
So you drink coffee, you're sorted through the night.
No, you would be.
So it traveled to Europe westwards from the Middle East through the Silk Road. So at the time, we're talking 1400s. Venice basically owned the naval route for the Silk Road. So you could travel from what is now Egypt up the Adriatic. And Venice was the end of the Adriatic. And then that was faster than taking it overland. So you could then spread it through what is now France and Germany and Britain and the Holy Roman Empire via Venice. And this is where coffee house culture came in, and we'll talk about it later and how it possibly even sparked the Enlightenment.
Coffee house being like the medieval equivalent of Costa.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Ye olde Costa.
Ye olde Costa.
All right, so are you guys ready to crack into our first lunchbox?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, let's do it. Today, Rosie, you are our first lunchbox. What have you bought?
Well, guys, coffee's quite a hard one coming from a gastronomic point of view. Yeah. Because it is a drink. And yes, it is also a flavour used in cookery. But it's quite limited in its uses. I decided to have a look online and see what kind of wacky coffee cookery situations I could find. What I did find a lot of information about and a lot of chat about was the effect of coffee on meat. And how it's used in meat cookery. Mm. So today I decided that the thing that sounded the nicest to me was a coffee rubbed bacon sandwich.
Oh my God, what a treat.
So the bacon in this sandwich is, of course,
look at it.
Oh, smoked streaky, because I'm not insane.
Is that your fave? Wait, explain this.
Streaky bacon has high fat content, so it crisps up much better. It doesn't have that big medallion of fillet, basically, that is always really dry. And smoked, because if you're not smoking it, well, what is the point? Mm-hmm. So opinions here, there and everywhere. And so what I did was I had a look at a few recipes online and I sort of amalgamated them into my own version, which we are about to find out if that was a good idea or not. I basically took some coffee grinds from my coffee that I had this morning, along with a splash of said coffee, mixed it with a bit of maple syrup, and then rubbed that all over my bacon and let it sit for about 5-6 hours. Oof. And I've just grilled it in the oven, and it's very simply in a bacon sandwich comprising two slices of bread and some butter. I have got some ketchup, but I think it's good to eat this naked to start with, to get the full effect.
The smell is like I have no words, which is not useful when you're recording a podcast, but the maple is so strong.
Yeah, the maple has gone through well. That's not bad, that.
Mm.
Oh, my
That's
God.
That's better than not bad.
I would do that again.
Mm-hmm.
That surprised me how nice that is.
You should do that again. Mm. This is amazing.
So coffee as a flavour, bitter flavours are typically used in cookery as a sort of balancing feature. So bitter will suppress or enhance sweet and sour tastes. And there's a brilliant book, actually, written by my friend Alexina Anatole, called Bitter, which is a whole cookery book just on how to use bitter flavors in cooking. I really recommend it. So for bacon, for example, which is A, quite sweet, B, quite salty, C, in this case, smoky, the coffee really rounds that out. I think it's made it even sweeter. So you might have heard of tannins. Coffee contains tannins, or tannic acid, what makes your mouth dry and kind of puckering when you drink a really strong coffee or red wine, for example.
In wine.
And tannins break down proteins. They bind to proteins and they get in between the protein strands. So when you're cooking a large piece of meat, which has lots of protein strands in it, you're actually, in theory, tightening them up. But because the tannins get in the way, that is inhibited. So it stays tender, stays moist, stays juicy. Have you ever had coq au vin, where you marinate a whole chicken in red wine or white wine? It's the same thing, right? The meat becomes so tender afterwards because of all that those tannins. Coffee works the same way. So the other thing about coffee and meat is that coffee echoes some of the flavors that you get from the Maillard reaction when you cook meat. It tastes sort of almost sweet, and the coffee is like a sort of super enhancer of those flavors, and it makes it really, really strong. And this is the first time I've ever tried cooking with coffee in this way.
Yeah. I was going to say, you smashed it.
Well, I mean, I absolutely flew by the seat of my pants. But it is, of course, used in baking as well, more famously.
Coffee and walnut cake.
Chefs will often say, only cook with wine you would drink. Similarly with coffee, if you're cooking a coffee, use good coffee. Use coffee that you would drink, use coffee that's fresh. Anyway, so coffee and baking, it's most often found in like chocolate recipes because did you know that dark chocolate also has a high caffeine level?
Yeah, I did.
There you go.
Sorry.
No, it's only, I'm so glad.
No, only because when you have problems sleeping, they're always like, don't look at dark chocolate.
Yeah, that'll wake you right up. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so obviously like caffeine on caffeine, they work together, that bitterness is enhanced. Mm. I actually have had a couple of interesting incidents recently cooking with coffee in sweet things. So firstly, I was developing a recipe for a coffee mousse for a magazine article I was writing. And I really struggled because it kept leaking, right? So if you make a mousse, let's say with chocolate, it will be really, really supple and soft, and there shouldn't be any liquid coming out at the bottom. Mm. It should be completely well bound, right? So I was like, well, what's the problem here? Why is my coffee mousse, which didn't contain any chocolate, was literally just variations of coffee, whipped cream and egg whites and sugar. Why is this not working? Why is this leaking? And basically, it's the tannins again. Fucking tannins. They can interact with proteins and fat and cream. They increase viscosity and actually gelatation. Gelatation.
Wow, I didn't know that was a word.
Word. That's my word for nice. Today.
I want to say jellification.
Jellification, isn't that what happened to Hackney in the 2010s?
Which makes the fats more solid, which means that they do not bind with liquids as well, right?
Okay.
So that means that there's excess water in egg whites, there's excess water potentially in the coffee you've used, let's say you've used an espresso shot. Mm. And so I was really struggling with it. And in the end, what I had to do was use instant coffee and condensed milk.
Oh, wow.
And just mix them together, because the condensed milk, as I've said previously, is an inverted sugar.
Oh, yeah.
And that was binding well with the coffee and preventing the liquids from seeping.
Wow, I heard it here first.
But whilst we're talking about coffees and messing around with its chemistry and flavors, one thing I've seen some people do, I've never done it myself, is putting a little bit of salt in your coffee.
Oh, right.
Mm. So apparently the way that the salt binds to receptors in your tongue confuses them and kind of removes some of the bitterness
from the coffee. Okay.
So it's supposed to make it more smooth and rounded and less like, that tanniny dryness, bitterness.
Right. That's good to know.
I'm going
to
give that a go, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, ultimately, potentially even more dehydrating than
that would definitely. Stuff.
So what do we think of this?
I inhaled it. It's delicious.
Mm-hmm. You know what I thought when I was making it was that it's basically like a coffee and a sandwich in one go.
Do you think it's caffeinated then?
Well, there's quite a lot of coffee grounds on this.
Yeah. Speaking of caffeine content, did you know that the high street brands of coffee, their coffees vary wildly in terms of caffeine content.
Really?
I didn't know that.
Surprisingly, like if you order a cappuccino in Costa, apparently it has 325 milligrams. Starbucks has the least, 66 milligrams. So almost five times as much.
Well, fucking Starbucks. I knew that shit was absolute water.
Oh, there goes our Starbucks.
Yeah, I was
going
to say, sorry.
I don't think they would have sponsored us anyway. We're way too political.
Greg's has 197, so already quite a lot lower. Cafe Nero, 110. Pret, 180. Starbucks, 66. Did you laugh at Cafe Nero?
Cafe Nero.
I spent ages calling it Cafe Nero, and I probably still will because of peer pressure, but I didn't realize it wasn't just named after a man called Nero. It is the Italian word for black coffee, right?
Yeah. But do you say prêt à manger?
No, I don't.
Right.
Well, I'm just saying it.
What other examples can I give?
Only...
Do you say croissant? Or,
hey, stop. I get the concept.
It's really interesting that Pret contains less caffeine, because that really proves my theory that they burn the shit out of their coffee so that it tastes stronger than it actually is.
Oh, really?
Because have you ever noticed that Pret coffee tastes like a fucking bonfire?
I love
it. I'm going to slam you coffee brands now. It's about to go down.
Next? Well, I mean, that was just the cappuccino. Pret's espresso actually has the most caffeine.
I just want to defend Pret for having like the most affordable black coffee I've come across. They do the 99p
filter.
Every time. People do get super, super nerdy and very protective and quite violent about making coffee,
including Beethoven, right?
He was the 60 beans,
60 beans precisely.
But one of the things I found out, which I love, is not all coffee beans are created equal. Literally in terms of like physically, some are more dense than others, so you can have the same number
like humans.
like people. So like Beethoven could have been counting a completely different like weight of coffee because some are more dense than others. And that has to do with like the kind of soil that they've grown in, the altitude they're grown on, the amount of rainfall. All of these things affect your bean, which is why people weigh their ground coffee. The first thing that popped into my head is I know so many coffee nerds that like weigh the water and weigh their beans. And I thought they were just being super extra.
To get the perfect ratio.
Exactly. And guys, I have found potentially the golden ratio for brewing the perfect cup of coffee.
Wow.
It's kind of that ideal ratio that's going to give you a kind of consistent extraction of all of those like beautiful coffee flavors from the coffee and not make it too bitter. Like it's the consistency you want. It is 1 gram of coffee to 17 grams of water.
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh God, how many grams of water mental in maths, a cup? Yeah.
About 300 milliliters in a coffee mug.
Mm-hmm.
So you need 20 grams of coffee.
Oh, well done, Jack.
That's going to be a bit of a strong one.
Have you guys, either of you done barista training?
No, well, okay. I did work in a coffee shop and the 42-year-old guy, local Sheffield lad, told me how to do it. And he was just like, just stick it in there, like turn the tap on and it comes out and like Bob's your uncle.
Nice. Right. So no then.
So no.
Sorry, I did it. Sheffield. I did it years and years ago. So I definitely wouldn't be able to pour a nice coffee now from a machine. But one of the things that stuck with me from barista training was that you should never put boiling hot water straight on an espresso or like ground coffee, because the actual best temperature for coffee brewing is between 90 and 96 degrees. So a full 10 degrees under boiling.
Wow.
So what we would do is we'd put the cup underneath the water spout.
Careful.
The water would come out, we let it sit, and then we'd do a shot of espresso into that, or two shots or whatever.
Wow. I don't know if people can actually tell the difference.
I think there are people who can. I have friends of mine who are like Muslim, for example, and they don't drink. And coffee is really important to them because it's like their wine. It's very artisanal. It has a massive like range and spectrum of flavors, qualities. And so, yeah, like really, really beautifully made, incredibly faffy coffee is actually for them a really exciting and something they're really up for spending money on, because they're not out at the fucking pub every weekend spaffing their money on 16 Guinnesses like us.
Speak for yourself.
Let's move on to our second lunchbox, and that is you, Jack. What have you bought for us today?
I've brought coffee and tea. So this is an idea. It wasn't mine originally. It was King Gustav III of Sweden.
My favourite Gustav.
Oh, really? Yeah. Yeah. I think two was overrated. So Gustav III, he was reigning in the late 1700s. He really hated coffee. He thought it was bad for you. He thought it encouraged bad thoughts and dissidents in his people. I think it came from slightly racist roots. Europe was quite Christian, and they'd seen how people in the Middle East were mostly Muslim, and they were also drinking coffee. Also, it was seen by the authorities as a sort of stimulant to discussion and thinking outside the box, and a way to sort of empower the people, and sometimes empower them against the people in charge. So for various reasons, coffee was banned and then unbanned in Sweden for about five times between 1700 and 1820. And so he was determined to prove that coffee was bad, and he decided to do a scientific experiment. In fact, one of the early twin studies, which are now sort of the gold standard for testing the difference between certain things, he managed to find these two twins, twin men in their 20s, who were convicted of something serious because the penalty was to be put to death. And he said, I will save you from execution and reduce it to life in prison if one of you drinks three cups of coffee a day, the other one drinks three cups of tea a day, and we'll see who lives the longest.
Ooh.
So prepare. One of you I'm going to ask to...
For the rest of our natural lives.
So he made one of them drink tea and the other one coffee. What do you think happened? Who outlived the other.
I assume that coffee, it's more potent, is probably the way I'd put it.
It's certainly, a cup of coffee has more caffeine in. But I mean, that's the interesting thing, is that tea leaves themselves actually have twice as much caffeine as coffee.
Oh.
But when you make a cup of each, there's more coffee in your cup of coffee.
I think tea.
It's a bit of a trick question. Basically, they both outlived both the king and his two doctors who were there to look after them and monitor them for the years and years.
Oh, damn. Yeah,
One of them we know lived to 83. We don't know how long the other one lived, but tea or the coffee did not kill them. So that was a big fuck you to Gustav and his theories, and a big like thumbs up to the coffee drinkers.
Nice.
So what I thought is we could combine the two and live to 166.
Wait, like literally combine tea and coffee?
Have you ever done it before?
No, because I'm not mad.
So we're going to pour one into the other. I've been steeping some tea leaves and likewise some coffee grounds. Here we go, look.
Oh.
Don't cross the streams. Well, you could call it toffee or key.
Toffee or key.
Very bitter.
I would say it's not my favorite, to be honest.
I think there's a reason it doesn't exist.
You know what? It tastes like it's going to keep me awake, and my brain's like, oh, this is great.
Yeah.
You kind of lose the best of both of them.
It tastes brown.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Tastes like, you know, have you seen the Polar Express? You know when the guy makes his coffee up on the roof of the train and it's like, have a cup of Joel or whatever, and it looks literally like muck. That's what it tastes like.
So that's coffee and tea together. We did it so you don't have to.
You've actually got through quite a lot.
I'm downing it.
So coffee houses are quite important through history. So picture the start of the 17th century, so we're talking what is known as the Enlightenment. So that's when people started sort of questioning the religious authority and appreciating science much more and sort of writing philosophical treatises in a way they hadn't done since classical Greece. And we think that it's not just a coincidence that coffee was also spreading, so was tea, because caffeine boosts the way our brain works. And not only that, it was also replacing alcohol. Earlier than this, people would drink gin in the streets and beer all day, even beer for breakfast. It was, I think it was weaker, but it was you were constantly drinking.
But a lot
it.
Safer, because like just plain water wasn't okay to drink.
Absolutely.
Like really, really low alcohol percent beer was the way forward.
And then coffee arrives on the scene, and it's still a bit of a luxury. So it's only really relatively well-off people in cities like London and Liverpool and Amsterdam and Venice and Vienna as well, across the continent, who would sit in these new coffee houses that came up. They were known as penny universities because there was such freedom of thought and expression going on. And you'd pay a penny to sit in and have your coffee. They were way more egalitarian than private clubs because you didn't need to be a member to join. You still had to pay for your drinks, but they were much more intellectual than taverns as well. So you ended up with a real mix of society, and people were able to share ideas in a way. They weren't in their own bubbles like you often would imagine.
Not shit-faced drunk either.
Yeah.
Quite useful.
But that was why they were so dangerous to authority, because it was all this mixing of social classes and just the idea that this was a sort of hub for information. So print newspapers started being produced from the ideas and pamphlets, and the stock exchange came out of coffee house discussions. And some of them still exist. The Lloyd's of London insurance market began in Edward Lloyd's coffee house in 1686.
Oh, really?
And that building's still there. I don't think it makes coffee anymore. But
sorry, I'm imagining like this is just old school cocaine chat on a really big scale. You know when people are like, oh my God, no.
I've got this business idea.
Yeah, we got to do it. We got to print a magazine now and everyone's going to hear about it. And it's going to be great.
Have you read my zine? And lots of business. So the East India Trading Company, it already existed, but it started introducing economic ideas like the idea of shared liability. So you'd have lots of funders who would fund this ship to the New World, and then you'd be covered by insurance. And the idea of compound interest also came out from this time. So business interests and arguably the start of global trade came about, from coffee. But obviously this is a very Eurocentric view. Interestingly, the Islamic Golden Age, which is often overlooked, which preceded it, it ran from about 700 CE to 1200, am I right?
Yeah, so the 8th to the 17th centuries. It definitely had an impact. There was actually someone called Sultan Murad, who was an Ottoman emperor. So he ruled between 1623 to 1640-ish. He also absolutely hated coffee for the same reasons as Gustav. And he's known for like executing people and giving really, really harsh punishments to citizens who had been discovered drinking coffee.
Wow.
Yeah, it is mad.
Because people would be politically active and start questioning authority. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, wow, yeah. So it's not just common to Sweden.
No.
I read actually about there's a Pope, Constance the Eighth, and he was told about coffee and he decided it was the drink of infidels. And then there was pressure on presumably these sort of wealthy elites who were having these ideas to unban it. And so the Catholic Church had a moment where they had to decide, is coffee good or bad? And so what he had to do was taste a cup. And he liked it so much, he declared it like completely fine for Catholics to drink. And nice. He said something like, this infidel drink is delicious. We should stick it to the devil by drinking it ourselves. Mm-hmm. And he basically unbanned it in 1600.
Is unbanned a word?
I like it.
It is a word once you've had my coffee tea mix.
It's good. But also the Catholics always get the best food. And the Christians in general, just coming from a Muslim household, like I remember because I went to people who take communion and could eat pork and had all the nice wines. In my head, it makes sense that a Pope would taste coffee and be like, we are having that. Yes. Yeah.
But imagine the pressure on the barista who had to make this one like very important cup of coffee for the, you know, European historical timeline.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what the latte art he did on it. Probably a crucifix, actually. Yeah. And then they began to decline in the 18th century as tea became fashionable and urban redevelopment changed city layouts. So, and it also just became a bit more commonplace. You could make it in your own homes.
Mm. And then the rise of the coffee nerd. I like it. If we're talking about the incredibly massive impact that caffeine particularly has had on the way we think, I didn't actually know how it worked. Mm. So apparently caffeine blocks sleepy receptors. I've obviously written my own notes for this. They're scientifically not called sleepy receptors, but they are the receptors in your brain that realize when you're getting sleepy. They are called adenosine receptors. So basically the caffeine binds to those and blocks them, and it kind of just stops your brain from feeling
when
sleepy.
When you wake up, you have no adenosine. Mm-hmm. And then as through the day, it slowly drips one by one into your adenosine receptors until it gets to a critical mass, and that's when you feel sleepy enough to go to bed.
Nice.
So what caffeine does is it sits in these adenosine receptors. The receptors don't notice it's there, but then they don't receive the adenosine. But then that's where you get a caffeine crash, is because then suddenly the caffeine gets denatured. It's suddenly there are all these empty adenosine receptors and they start swamping empty gaps much quicker than it would
like
naturally through the day. Yeah.
Wow. Another fun effect that caffeine has that I had lots of fun reading about was it does make you horny. So basically every food that you look at as a researcher has been like thought of or has been dubbed an aphrodisiac at some point.
I was going to say, is it still a bit woohoo?
Well, caffeine actually does work. So in 2023, researchers were studying the effects of caffeine in women. Beautiful title, The Acute Effect of Caffeine on Genital Arousal in Women.
Hmm.
And found that it actually worked. So women who drank a cup of coffee were like quite a lot more excited than ones who hadn't, or who had the control, like non-caffeinated cup, which is really interesting. And they're hoping that they can use their results to help women who are taking antidepressants and might have a kind of reduced libido. And there's some evidence that it helps men who suffer with ED, so erectile dysfunction, but the studies aren't as conclusive as the 2023.
For once that the studies are more conclusive on women's side than on men's, that never happens, does it?
So you have to drink the coffee, you don't like rub it over your naked body.
No, I think it's for internal use.
Yeah, again, you have to drink the coffee.
That would be really, really uncomfortable.
Oh, God.
That's straight into the old thrush or urinary tract infection territory.
Damn.
Who was it that was advocating coffee enemas? that I read the other
Gandhi?
Day.
Gandhi?
What?
No.
I'm like
this as well.
Pretty sure. Well, he definitely loved an enema.
Okay.
I'm pretty
so it's
sure
based on something.
He liked coffee enemas too. Hmm. It might just be straight up enemas, but he was very keen on putting lots of liquid on your butt. I think they're just quite a famous thing. Like, as soon as humans decided to start flushing stuff up their butt, they were like, let's try this one. It's great.
So I guess one of the age-old questions around coffee is, like, does it dehydrate you? Does it make you need a wee? Like, is it actually a diuretic? And also, does it make you need a poo? Because it certainly does with me.
That's true. I think the idea that it's dehydrating comes from the fact that it's a very, very mild diuretic and therefore is slightly less hydrating than water, which is completely neutral. So okay. if you had 300 milliliters of water, you would need a wee. And if you had 300 milliliters of coffee, you would need a wee slightly more.
Okay. Interesting. And then, so poo? Onto poo?
Is that in your lunchbox?
Leave it there. We're not entirely sure what it is in the coffee that does it, because it could be the caffeine, but it could be a couple of other chemicals. But we're pretty certain that, yes, it does kind of stimulate your gut and make you need a bit of a poo, a massive poo.
Mm. I guess there's something in that, like, most accelerants will make you need a poo.
Mm.
Like, you know, even if you drank a Red Bull, which has caffeine in it, you'd need a poo straight away.
Yeah. I think there is also something to be said for just, like, normally we drink coffee in the morning. It's one of the first things that we put in our bodies.
Oh, that's true.
And normally once you start eating and drinking, your digestive system's going, like,
it wakes blah, 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 blah. Up, yeah.
So yeah, that might also contribute to...
Is that a technical term?
Mm-hmm. Blah, blah, blah. There it is. It is time for our third lunchbox, which is, of course, mine. I have brought with me...
Instant coffee.
Instant coffee.
I know. I can't believe it. Oh,
isn't that exciting? Today, I have bought instant coffee because it's actually an incredibly interesting product. I had never thought about how instant coffee was made.
Yeah.
Like, we've spoken so much about how to make the perfect cup of coffee, the history, its political impact, but not the savior of the morning rush, instant coffee. So it was invented in 1901
by a
Japanese chemist called Satoru Kato. He was trying to make a more stable, kind of soluble coffee powder. It wasn't until George Constant Lewis Washington perfected the process in 1909 that instant coffee became more popular. And this was particularly so in World War I, when loads of products were really scarce and they needed a lot of quick energy and also something that was really easily transportable.
Mm.
So that's how instant coffee exploded. But the actual process behind making it is mad. So there are two ways of making instant coffee. One is freeze drying, which we've already spoken about a little bit when we looked at ice cream. And one is spray drying. So in freeze drying, what you do is you brew a load of coffee and then you freeze it in big slabs at around minus 50 degrees centigrade. So super, super cold, big, big icy slabs of coffee. And then you pop it in a vacuum chamber where it turns immediately into vapor. So it goes from a solid into a powder.
Sublimation.
It, exactly right.
Stop, this isn't ASMR food.
Oh, God. Anyway, so that's freeze drying. And then spray drying. So you need a really, really tall, big container to do this in. But basically, you get a load of hot coffee that you've just brewed.
Mm-hmm.
And then you spray it through really, really hot air in a fine mist. And that super heats it. The water evaporates and all of the particles fall to the floor.
Like coffee snow.
Yeah, like coffee
snow. Yeah, it's giving Wonka.
Yeah.
It's true, a bit Wonka.
Yeah.
Can you do it with chocolate?
Oh, I mean, you probably wouldn't want to, because one of the things that happens is when you super, super heat coffee like this is it loses a lot of its kind of natural flavor compounds.
No.
So spray drying coffee in particular, it's cheaper to do, but it burns off a lot of the tasty compounds.
Yeah, I guess.
So companies that make the instant coffee, they have come up with aroma recovery systems.
Okay.
I know.
This sounds more and more Wonka.
Which are ways to capture all of the kind of flavor, deliciousness compounds that have floated away and then trap them so that they can use them after the process is done.
Aroma recovery system.
Mm-hmm.
Arse.
Yes, Jack. That is.
I've just thought of another use, and I'm going to rush to the patent office now with my sketches.
Nice. So they process the aromatics that they've collected from their brew coffee, and then they'll put it back in at the end of the process.
Can I buy some of this pure aromatic coffee mixture?
Yeah.
Ooh,
that'd be great to huff.
Oh, that would be nice. First thing in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
And then there are other companies that want to save a little bit of money. So instead of going through the trouble of collecting the aromas during the brewing process, they'll just buy synthetic aromas, like a cheaper version that they can just like spritz on the instant at the end. I have with me both caffeinated and decaffeinated versions here today.
I've often wondered how one decaffeinates coffee.
Yeah, so this is something I was looking at when I was looking at the process of making instant coffee, because basically you brew it with paint stripper beforehand. It's great
what?
Fun.
What?
Yeah, so decaf coffee is processed with either methylene chloride, which is literally used as a paint stripper.
Oh, God.
But it's not very food safe, so there aren't many coffees that are made using this process anymore.
I should bloody hope not.
Yeah, I know.
All the bloody pregnant women drinking the decaf coffee, and it turns out they're drinking paint stripper.
And then the more food safe one, the happy one, is ethyl acetate, which if you have heard of acetone, you know,
yeah.
Smells of
removing
pears.
Nail varnish.
Exactly, nail varnish remover.
Sorry, Jack, not one for you.
I'll have you know that there's acetone in the paints used in Airfix models, so I'm quite familiar with it.
Oh, okay.
It is also used as a nail varnish remover, but what happens is those chemicals bind to the caffeine molecules in the coffee. So if you process that first, it kind of strips the caffeine away. Not all of it, though, mind you, because a completely caffeine-free coffee does not exist. There's always a tiny bit left. But yeah, and then you can put it through the process as normal.
Right, okay. That makes me feel a little bit better. Just the nail varnish remover that I'm drinking, not the paint stripper.
It's not left in the coffee, but those are the types of chemicals that are stripping away the caffeine.
I was interested as to whether drinking coffee has any benefits or harms and which outweighs the other. And coffee is good for you, but only in the morning. So there's a recent study they found. They followed 40,000 adults who were coffee drinkers. And after 10 years following them up, they were 31% less likely to die from cardiovascular disease and 16% less likely to die of any cause. But this was nullified by those who drank coffee throughout the day. And they theorized that it's because you lose some sleep if you're drinking coffee too late. And that has... It basically negates the health benefits from to your heart.
I don't really want the answer to this question because I drink so much coffee. But how much is too much, do we reckon?
I would imagine that you'd be at risk of a heart event if you drunk 30 espressos in one day or something.
That is exactly right.
Oh my God, I'm a scientist.
Yeah, having a heart event, that is what gets you if you consume too much caffeine.
Yeah.
So the lethal dose is 42 espressos.
Wait, you said exactly right.
No, as in like, that's how you die if you drink too much caffeine.
She wasn't right.
Yeah, no, not the third. That would have been spooky. So the lethal dose is 70 cups of coffee in a day or 42 espressos. That will do. That will do you in.
Oh my God.
But yeah, I read quite a few articles because like I said, I drink so much. I didn't think that you could actually die from drinking too much coffee. But there are quite a few instances where people are taking caffeine powder, which is quite popular in people who are really into training and bodybuilding.
Yes, because we should say if you do drink 42 espressos in one sitting, your kidneys will filter most of it out into urine before the caffeine has a chance to accumulate in your brain or your blood.
Mm-hmm. But if you do it with straight up caffeine powder, it's actually really dangerous.
Right.
So there are a few instances where people get their measurements wrong. And because it is so concentrated, it's quite easy to do. Mm. Actually, in 2017, Northumbria University was fined £400,000 for giving a pair of students 30 grams of caffeine instead of 0.3 grams of caffeine. So that's 100 times more than they were supposed to have. They made a full recovery, but yeah, they were not in a good shape and they have complete memory loss of that event.
Can I just say that in the notes it says student guinea pigs? And I was like, guinea pigs? How did they know that the guinea pigs had memory loss and needed to go to hospital? I was literally like, that's so crazy that they would find that much money for those two guinea pigs.
That is it for this week's edition of Lunchbox Envy. You can follow us on our socials for foodie facts and podcast updates. We are on X, Facebook, Instagram and TikTok at Lunchbox Envy Pod.
Yep, and we'll also be posting up any recipes that we've mentioned on the website. So just head to qi.com/lunchbox to check them out.
So, Rosie, do you have any coffee recipes in your new book?
Well, in my cookbook, Good Time Cooking, available in all good bookstores, I have written a recipe for a two-person serve of tiramisu. Ooh. Because I think, well, there is a problem with tiramisu recipes. It's just that usually to serve like 6 to 8 people. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what if you're just one or two people and you just want a small, sensible portion that'll take you through to the morning, maybe? Anyway, it's a very useful recipe because you can scale it up or down and it's also very delicious. I love tiramisu. I eat it like a religion. So yeah, I'm proud of it.
Oh, we will leave you with this. If you think high street coffee is getting too expensive, please spare a thought for Alessia Shemovakia, who in 2018 bought a cup of coffee from a kebab shop in Zurich. When the card machine asked her for a tip, she mistakenly entered her PIN code and ended up being charged 7,732 francs, which was a 32,000% tip.
Oh, God.
Yep.
Guys.
By the time she realized the error, the shop had conveniently gone bankrupt and she never got her money back.
Tragic tale.
On that note, thanks for listening. We will see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. Lunchbox Envy was hosted by Jack Chambers, Rosie McKean, and me, Manu Oreo. It was mixed by Liang Li and produced by Alex Bell. This has been a quite interesting podcast.